Blog Talk Radio.
And good morning, everybody, and welcome here to another great episode we have of Suspense Radio One-on-One. This is the edition that we do with the authors that are on tour with the Partners in Crime series. And today we have another author that is on tour right now. She is an author of the book called The Red Queen Dies. She's a professor of criminal justice in the University of Albany. And that is in New York. We kind of talked a little bit off the air. That's the capital of New York, for everybody who doesn't know, and the home of BoucherCon 2013 this year. So if you haven't registered and you want to go, check that out too. So we want to welcome author Frankie Bailey to the show to talk about her book, The Red Queen Dies. So Frankie, thanks so much for coming on. How are you doing?
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me. I'm great.
So we kind of talked a little bit about the book off the air because it's very much layered, like you called it, especially if people go on your website, which is FrankieYBailey.com. That's FrankieYBailey.com. And the one thing that they want to click on then is the police procedural, because it'll take them right to where they can click on the Red Queen Dies book. So give everybody a little bit about the background and, you know, the layers of the book and kind of how it goes, because when you look at the table of contents online, you're going to see three very popular, not only books, but events in U.S. history that kind of all work itself within the book.
Yeah, and I need to explain how I came to write this book. I started the series. I should point out that as a criminal justice professor, I specialize in crime history and crime in mass media popular culture. So readers will see that I'm deep into popular culture, I'm deep into crime history. My other series as a crime historian, and when I started to think about a new series, I was looking at what I could do. I'd spoken to Marcia Markland, who is now my editor at St. Martin's, and I was thinking about a new series, and I had three or four ideas. And actually, I've been working with crime history. I wanted to do something set in the present or the near future. The near future because I'm really interested in a lot of social issues like climate change and haves and have-nots and hate politics and surveillance and privacy issues. That grows out of my academic research. And so I was thinking about what I could do. And actually, I should say the near future idea occurred to me because I was thinking about I wanted to do something in an urban setting. I wanted to do a protagonist who would find really interesting. I thought about a forensic psychologist, a cultural anthropologist, and finally I settled on a police detective because as a criminal justice professor, I've had an opportunity to teach a crime investigation class, to attend an autopsy, and also as a part of a research project I was involved in looking at stress and policing to do ride-alongs with female police officers and their partners and interview them. So I wanted to do a female police officer. And I was thinking about where that should be set, in Albany, of course, because I've done research on Albany, particularly Albany in the early 20th century, but I'm really fascinated by Albany history. And I ended up with the near future aspect of this in part thanks to Sean Connery. I'm a real Sean Connery fan. And I've seen Outland. I don't know if you know that movie. It's Sean Connery. He's a federal marshal. It's a space station. And it's like High Noon and Outer Space. High Noon is my favorite Western. And so I was thinking about that, and I thought, I really don't want to do science fiction. I'm not a science fiction writer. I'm a mystery writer.
Right.
But I wanted to do something where I could bring in that aspect of technology and futuristic drugs and, you know, technology gone wrong, because as you probably know in my books, you know, sometimes the technology doesn't work. And I wanted to deal with, you know, people living in a particularly stressful type of situation. And so when I was thinking about near future and the necessity of having a twist, of having something that was set in my book in a parallel universe, alternate reality, I came up with the idea of having a sighting of a UFO in 2012. And the book begins in 2019, 7 years later. And I'm really dealing with how people are coping with, you know, a verified UFO sighting, and what do you do after that? I mean, there's something out there, you know, the jets scramble, the UFO disappears, never to be seen again. It's 7 years later, and people are going about their daily lives. There's this kind of anxiety and fear and stress that's the subtext of everything they're doing. And some people are coping better than others, and some people are responding in bizarre ways. And that led me, in part, to the Alice in Wonderland theme. But also, it's linked
to
Abraham
Lincoln.
Yeah,
that's very interesting. I like that twist. Yeah, that's kind of a neat little twist how you kind of put that in there.
Yeah, and oddly enough, that is linked to Abraham Lincoln. You asked about Lincoln and John
right.
Wilkes Booth. There's so many. As a historian, I'm just fascinated by the many ways in which Albany plays a role in the Booth-Lincoln assassination. They were both in Albany in 1861. On the same day, Booth was appearing at a theater. Lincoln was on his way to his inaugural, and they both were in Albany. And then a couple mm-hmm. of months later, Booth was back in Albany, and he was appearing in a play with his lover, and they got into an argument, and she stabbed him. You know, not a serious wound, but I was so fascinated by that whole idea of, you know, what if she had killed him here in Albany, how that would have affected what happened later. And so
right.
then there's you know, the major and his fiance who were in the box with Lincoln at the theater on that night were from Albany. The hatter, the hat maker who was involved in tracking down John Wilkes Booth was from Troy, near Albany. And in fact, the hatter thing led me to Alice in Wonderland, because I love Alice in Wonderland. It's one of my favorite books. And I was thinking hatter and about the Mad Hatter, and I thought Alice in Wonderland. And that brought me
right.
back to theater, and that brought me to my title character, the Red Queen, who is my fictional title character, who is in Albany working on a play about Booth and Henrietta Irving, the actress who tried to kill him, when she becomes the third victim, apparent third victim of a serial killer in Albany. So it's a really layered plot, as I told you.
And so your character, Detective Hannah McCabe, what makes that character the perfect one to be able to fit within this layered book that you kind of, that you know, that you have going on? Give us a little bit of background inside, you know, who exactly is Hannah McCabe?
Well, you know, I think, and this is, I have to say, I was a double major in English and psychology as an undergrad, so I never quite got over that. So this is, I don't want to sound too dramatic, but I think we're all wounded in one way or another, that, you know, sometimes the wounds are deep and sometimes they're minor, and, you know, part of it is the family that we grew up in and the coping skills that we learn as a part of that. And so Hannah is someone who is dealing with something that happened when she was 9 years old that changed her life, changed her brother's life. The family dynamics in her family were really interesting. Her mother was black. She's now dead. And a poet, her father white, and a journalist and an editor. So she grew up in a family where language was really important, and so I get to bring in all the popular culture stuff. But also, she grew mm-hmm. up in a family where she knew that her brother was her mother's favorite child, and she was her father's favorite child. And so the way that she learned to navigate that family relationship, those family relationships, and how she's dealt with what happened when she was 9 years old. In fact, what happened when she was nine was the reason she became a police officer. That's made her really strong and really determined to see justice done. She's a very ethical character. I like my protagonists to be ethical. I mean, I like to place them in situations where they're challenged, but I also want them to always, you know, have justice in mind, to be concerned about it. And she's also someone who understands, has this compassion for other people, because she's had to have compassion for herself and trying to deal with the guilt she feels about what happened when she was nine.
You know, the one thing that fans should know right off the bat, and people that are new to you that are listening to the show and when they listen to it later, is that you can tell that you have such a grasp on who your character is. I mean, sometimes when you interview authors and they're like, oh, yeah, this character and, you know, my main character, well, they're a cop and they're a drunk. But you can tell that when you're talking about your character here, Hannah McCabe, that there's a lot of depth. There's a lot of things that, you know, you have really thought about when creating the character. So when you're starting to go through the book and you're writing and you're doing these things, how much when would the secondary characters come up and those characters in The Red Queen dies that maybe didn't have a big voice at the beginning but kind of depth themselves throughout the book, how do you kind of handle those challenges when they come up for you when you're writing?
Well, thank you for saying that. I'm glad you think she has depth. I have to say this goes back to the fact that this is my second series. And when I started working on the new series, I knew from my experience with Lizzie Stewart in my other series, that I needed to really think about the protagonist, because you don't get a second chance to go back and write the first book. I mean, whatever goes into the first book, you have to play by those rules through the rest of the series. So I wanted Hannah to be someone who was struggling, but I also wanted to surround her with supporting characters, other characters that she could relate to. So her father is Darren McGavin. Do you remember the actor Darren McGavin?
I do.
In Christmas Story, Kosciuszko.
Yep.
When I was thinking about her father, that's the person I cast in the role of her father. And I thought, well, if she could stand up to her father, if they can have a good relationship, and she's able to stand up to anyone. I think of him as kind of a grumpy, you know, smart character,
yeah.
And that's what I wanted her father to be. And, of course, she has a best friend from childhood. And then there's a partner. She has a new partner, Mike Baxter, who's a bit of a mystery so far. And that's because of the series arc, where we find out more about Mike as we go on. He's obviously, as the reader will realize, and I'm not giving away anything to say this, he may be up to something. And Hannah, over time, becomes more concerned about what her partner may be up to. But he's really a good partner for her in the sense of working together, because he has this sense of humor, and he will say things of witnesses, suspects that they're interviewing that Hannah would not say. She's a very polite, by-the-book type of person. And so it gives her openings to, you know, get into things that she might not otherwise be able to do. So they work well together as partners, but he is also something of an unknown at this point. And then, you know, the usual cast of people in the station house, because I grew up watching Hill Street Blues and Homicide.
Oh, yeah.
And so I have that idea, you know, that you always need those other characters, who other detectives who are going to play various roles, and I'm finding them really fascinating, their family lives, their backgrounds, and so that's going to be coming up now and then.
Now, seeing as how, you know, you are a professor of criminal justice and you're used to doing a lot of, you know, whether it's research, writing, and things like that, what was the one thing, was there one book, was there maybe some kind of epiphany that you got that you decided that you're going to throw yourself into this crazy publishing ring?
You mean getting into publishing mysteries?
Yeah, why
writing
did you,
mysteries?
Yeah, kind of like. Yeah, like, why did you decide, hey, you know what, I want to start becoming an author, or I want to start writing about, you know, mysteries, thrillers?
I actually started out writing nonfiction after finishing my dissertation about my hometown, Danville, Virginia, in the early 20th century. I needed something fun to do, and not to say that research wasn't fun, but I needed something more lighthearted, let me put it that way.
Right.
And I've always been to popular culture, and so I saw, I've been reading Agatha Christie. She has a book, 1939.
Oh, yeah.
It's now known as Then There Were None, but it had some other titles before that, including Ten Little Indians and Ten Little Inward. And so
yeah.
I was really fascinated by that book and that title. And so I decided to look at black characters in crime and detective fiction. And that was how I actually started going to mystery conferences. I joined NWA, joined Sisters in Crime, got to know mystery writers, and that the book came out. It was nominated for an Edgar, and so I was off and running in terms of being involved in mystery writing conferences. And then I actually came back to my roots because I was in the Army briefly as a food inspector stationed in Seattle.
Wow.
And during that time, I wrote two books that, as all writers do, they're in the bottom of my drawer, never to be resurrected. But
right.
That, those two books were my first attempt to write. And so once I became involved in the world of mystery writing, I decided to try to write a novel, a mystery novel. And mm-hmm. my inspiration was actually my dissertation. I had this lynching that had happened in Danville, my hometown, and I came up with this character, Lizzie Stewart, a crime historian who could investigate this lynching that her grandmother witnessed. So I always had the crime in the past and the crime in the present, still doing the Lizzie Stewart series. And so that, once I got into, after the first book was published, which turned out to be set in Cornwall, England, then the second book came out, and I ended up with five books in the series, and writing as I was being a criminal justice professor. And so now it's gotten to the point where I actually have two careers, which is kind of interesting. Luckily, they overlap a lot. And luckily, I have a dean mm-hmm. who understands that they overlap.
And so now, do you make your students, is this part of your assignment? You're like, all right, you got to read my book, and you got to give it
a good review
on Amazon. Otherwise, you're just not going to get a good grade in this class.
No, oddly enough, most criminal justice students don't read a lot of mysteries. They tend, if they're reading, to read true crime. So
right.
I usually have to introduce them to mysteries. And I'm talking about undergraduates mainly here. Graduate students may read a bit more widely. But I tend to use bestsellers so I can... But I'm trying to point out to them that mystery writers are dealing with social issues and interesting settings and all. So I teach classes, where I draw on mysteries and films and other things. But I don't use my own books. I would feel kind of self-conscious if they hated my books.
But sometimes you got to use what you got to use, and that's just one thing. So, but the other thing is there's got to be some kind of like a scene or maybe – a sentence even in the book, The Red Queen Dies, that you feel maybe captures the essence that you kind of look back and you're, whether you were thinking about it or how you were thinking about it, you really got it the way that you wanted to get it off. Where is that in the book, do you feel?
There's a scene and this is, well, I don't want to give too much away, but I think... I can talk about this one. There's an elderly woman in the book, Mrs. Givens, who appears early on in the book. She comes to the station house. She's been the victim of a crime. Some youthful gang members, young gang members, attacked her, and another young man came to her rescue, and he was killed in front of her, and she's been traumatized by this. And she takes a drug that makes it impossible for her to remember what happened exactly, and so she's no longer able to testify. But later on, Mrs. Givens is attacked again, and she ends up dying. And there's a scene at her funeral where Hannah McCabe goes outside, and there are these young boys who are outside on their bikes, and she's not sure why they're there, and she's wondering, should she call for backup? And that mm-hmm. scene has a twist that as I was writing it, I didn't know how it was going to go, and it went in a direction I hadn't anticipated, but it captured everything I wanted to say about Mrs. Givens and her community and stereotypes about people in those communities. And she, Mrs. Givens, is the opposite of my billionaire who has all of the latest technology, and it's really fascinating in its own right. But I wanted to deal with the haves and have-nots. And I think in that scene, I was saying something about the have-nots, but also saying something about what people believe about the have-nots.
And so it sounds like you're more of an organic writer than a plotter, right? You didn't sit there and just like outline the whole thing out. You kind of let things come to you as they come to you.
I outline as I'm going along. So I have to do a warm-up kind of thing where I write and rewrite and rewrite the first 50 pages until I begin to understand what the book is about and catch the voice of the book. And I actually have to know the title, and so I spend a lot of time writing and rewriting those first 50 pages. And so I outline as far as I can see, and I write to that point, and then I outline as far as and I write to that point. So it's like I outline the first third of the book, and then the next third, and then the next third. And so I don't do the whole thing, but often I don't follow my outlines. I need to know where I'm going because I have to do research for my books, and I need to know what I need to know so that when I get to that point, I don't have to stop and go out and figure out, you know, find someone who can tell me about this. But I, when I sit down and try to outline the whole, the entire book, that sort of shuts down my process.
That's very interesting. I think you're the first author I've ever heard to quite do the beginning that way. And that's very fascinating because, see, there's always a lot of authors and a lot of aspiring authors that listen to the show because they always want to hear from authors that have made it to, you know, past the initial, what the hell am I going to do with my book now? And so I always, and I try to give them a little bit of, I guess, writer's toolbox education. And so that's very interesting. I mean, that must have been something, did you just learn that on your own? Or, I mean, I just never heard of that before.
Well, it goes back to, in part, the fact that I'm also a nonfiction writer. And so I outline when I'm doing nonfiction. I do have a very systematic process. But I realize with nonfiction, which is also a kind of, you know, creative writing in part, even when you're dealing with facts, that that was the way I needed to do that. And I'd always hear, you know, mystery or writers, fiction writers say, you know, those who like to plunge in, that you just plunge in and start writing and, you know, go where you're going and you end up there. But in part because in my first series, I was writing about a crime historian, and I needed to go out and do field research and walk through everything that she does because her credibility depends on getting it right. I needed to outline enough so that I would know what I needed to know. And so when I sat down and started writing The Red Queen, I thought, oh, now I can just plunge in. But that wasn't true here either because I also still need to do research. And so, you know, I'm very uncomfortable getting into the book not having done my research because I do research, you know, in my all the time in my daily life. And so that allows me to really figure out, you know, if this is going to happen here, I need to go out and talk to this person. But it still gives me some flexibility in terms of what happens because the characters do begin to take over to some extent. You know, if you're writing and you're getting the characters right, they begin to say things and do things that you hadn't expected. And so this gives me, you know, the freedom to allow that to happen. It also gives me structure, which I need in order to, you know, really write because I don't like plunging in. That scares me.
Huh. Yeah. And so, you know, and I'm navigating here, you know, through the website, and I was looking around and doing a lot of things. So when you go to the Amateur Sleuth and you see the other, you know, your other character, Lizzie Stewart, and then you go to your nonfiction, you see many books you've written, you know, nonfiction, you've written 10. When people go on, like I said, they have to hit the police procedural, but, you know, kind of give us an outline of a little bit about, like, how you, you know, your website is set up. And the one thing that you, you know, you want readers and you want fans to understand when they go, what you're trying to do as far as, you know, like with the case files of the Red Queen dies and the things like that, how you're trying to make the story just that more in-depth.
Yeah, yeah, I found out with the Lizzie Stewart series that because the many of the stories there were inspired by real cases that people would say, well, what's true and what's not. And so I got into the habit of doing resources for those books so that, you know, if a book discussion group or just a general reader wanted to know, you know, what I was drawing on, that that person could go back and do that. For example, I had a book set in, that started in 1968 in Chicago and moved to Wilmington and then to post-Katrina New Orleans, the fourth book in the Lizzie Stewart series. And so I, you know, spent a lot of time doing that. And then I realized that with The Red Queen, I really needed those same types of resources. resources, because I do have so many different things going on, and sometimes you, even before starting the book, you know, I would advise if someone pick up the book and is about to read it, they might want to go to the website and read, look at the resources before getting started. Or also at the end of the book, we have some offers notes about, you know, what's true and what's not. But I know, you know, I don't want people to, you know, stop dead in the middle of the book and have to go, you know, figure out for themselves what's true or not. And so I thought if I put it on my website and have it at the end of the book, that people can have the information that they need to know that this is an alternate reality, parallel universe, you know, Albany history is true, some things in the near future are true. This is how I use, you know, these real things, these real events. So when they go to the website, you know, they should, as you said, go to Police Procedural, and then they'll see the cover of the Red Queen and can click on resources, and that will take them to, you know, some information. I'm adding to that as we go along.
Right.
So, you know, they'll find more there later on. But that will give them, you know, some basic information about Lincoln and Booth and Lewis Carroll and the other things that are important in terms of the book.
Well, frankly, we got about 60 seconds left here. So tell everybody a little bit about where maybe they can meet you, contact you, you know, Facebook, Twitter, things like that. So if they have any questions, this is the best place for them to get a hold of you at, and where you're going to be maybe for signings and things like that.
I'm going to be at Killer Nashville. I'm going to be at BoucherCon, of course. I'm going to be in Western New York, in Rochester. I'm going to be at Crime Bake, the New England Crime Bake. And also, pardon?
And I do also know the New England Crime Bake, yeah, I know.
I'll also, I want to mention if there are book clubs or discussion groups that would like me to send me questions, I'd be glad to answer them. We're going to be offering, this is something that's going to be coming up, I'm going to offer to come in person to one book club or discussion group, and we'll be putting more information about that up on my publisher's website. But they can also reach me. I have a contact form on my website, so I'm happy to answer questions or, if they have things about the book that they'd like to talk about, I'm happy to chat about that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I find it very fascinating. Like I said, the depth, the research, everything kind of that you put together to put into it. I mean, it's a very, very intriguing way of putting together a suspense thriller book. And, you know, people that are fans of the genre definitely need to go check it out. So we want to thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about it. Very fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been fun.
And good luck doing Partners in Crime Tour, and, you know, and have a blast out there meeting a bunch of new people.
Thank you. I'm really enjoying it.
So, all right. Thank you, Frankie, and enjoy yourself. We will talk with you later.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that is author Frankie Y. Bailey, FrankieYBailey.com, to find out more information. The book is called The Red Queen Dies. It comes out here, it says September 2013, so you can find it wherever books are going to be sold. I'm actually right now looking at the Amazon page, and it says it will be released on September the 10th, so you have a little bit of time to go out, check out everything you can about the book and a bunch of other stuff that Frankie has going on, and it was good. So, we want to join everybody here to come back. We're going to have our next Suspense Radio one-on-one. You just check out the website, suspensemagazine.com. Click on the Suspense Radio. It's Partners in Crime Tour. If you're an author, you need to search them out, check them out, and get yourself going with one of their tours that they have going on. I mean, people like Andrew Gross, John Land, Faye Kellerman. I mean, it can't all be bad, can it, people, when you got the big boys going to them, too. So, we want to thank you again so much for joining us. Listen to all of our past shows that we have here on the radio. And don't forget to check out Crime and Science Radio coming up. It's going to be our next radio show that's going to be featuring author extraordinaire D.P. Lyle and author extraordinaire Jam Burke to give you the inside information about forensics and everything else that goes on and what the authors get it right and how they get it wrong. And a bunch of guests that are coming on. So check that out. And we will see you guys all very shortly. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a wonderful time reading.